You are listening to www.integralnaked.org.
This talk is entitled Integral Transformative Practice, Part 3, Putting the Multiple Lines of Development to Play, featuring Mike Murphy, George Leonard, and Ken Wilber.
I really want to bear down on this issue that I mentioned at the beginning, which is now the practical side, now the ITP, the actual what modules do we have and how do we group them together and,
right.
You know, what research do we have on this and which of the 12 developmental lines, let's say, just say the roughly 12 intelligences, you going back to Future of the Body, let's just use 12. What of these are crucial, most important ones to help transformation? Obviously, cognitive line and self line and probably energy and interpersonal and so
on. That's a great, great, great question.
It's a big question.
That's a great question. I mean, we're at a stage right now where the questions are important, obviously. We've got to be asking the right questions
right.
in here, don't you think, George? I mean,
definitely.
That's a good question. I mean, which are the crucial lines? And that's a very good one.
I think
what
it's a good one. What was that?
What combination?
And what combination? We know that cross-training works. So you can sort of imagine a series of experiments in your head. Some of these we could probably actually do, but they're more sort of thought experiments. But you can take a group of people that are, let's say, and do just Vipassana. And I know some of this, a little bit of research has been done on this. But doing just Vipassana, a group doing Vipassana and weightlifting. A group doing Vipassana, weightlifting, and, let's say, Gestalt. Some good, quick psychodynamic thing. Now, let's say you just take those three populations, everything else considered equal. The question is not, are they just more balanced or more integrated in a certain sense? Well, that's almost certainly going to be true. The question is, judged on the basis of the Vipassana teachers themselves, which of those three groups make the most progress in Vipassana?
Yeah.
And the hypothesis is, the people that do all three do Vipassana faster.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of questions that we can start to ask.
Oh, you know, there are thousands of PhDs and research projects.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, this is the mother load.
It is the mother load.
And you can come at this every which way. I mean, that's a very good one right there. That's a great one. You know, by the way, there's quite a few of these in sport.
Yep.
For example, they started this one, 20 years ago, three groups. One group just practices physically. One does just mentally, and one does both, and the
yep.
obvious answer is the ones that do either the physical or the mental, past a certain point, they're about even. Let's say in basket shooting, people
uh-huh.
have roughly approximate thing,
uh-huh.
Which is interesting that visualization can have that much effect, but
right.
obviously the ones who do both do the best.
Right. And Mike, you and I used to kind of joke because Houston and Ram Dass, bless their hearts, who are our comrades in many ways, but we've been on the opposite sides of the evolutionary street with these boys. And Houston used to say, well, all of you and Murphy and George and I, you want to do all those things. We don't have enough time to do all that. And we always say, we don't have enough time not to. In other words, this is the quick route.
Yeah.
And simply trying to take one developmental line and push
yeah.
it into God is very ineffective.
You know, one way to look at this question about what's the best combination is if you take the notion that the integral will not be mocked, the return of the integral, you know,
yep.
in Freud's
yep.
sense, the return of the repressed.
It'll come back and get you.
What you neglect will come back and get you. Now, that's actually not true of all of our attributes, I'm convinced. But there are certain ones or certain aspects of our life that it is certainly true.
I agree, and that's why we're saying what are the crucial ones?
Yes, what are the most crucial
yeah.
what ones? And certainly physical health and fitness is crucial.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the most practical thing in the world. And certainly meditation is crucial. If you do not start to do this, it's like a whole civilization forgot how to shit,
yeah.
you know. The people aren't all meditating, some bit. You know,
yep.
you get so much.
Yep.
There are certain ones like this. If you do not attend to your relationships and make a real commitment to them,
yep.
boy, you pay in a thousand ways.
You know, I think it's, for me, the minimum thing that I was talking about earlier, the shortest acceptable definition of me for integral, as I was saying, is body, mind, and spirit in self, culture, and nature. And those six right there, if you're not doing those, you're going to get into trouble. And people can even spend a lot of time on their body, mind, and spirit, but if they're not doing culture, that is to say interpersonal relations, they get in trouble. you know, I think these are the types of questions that we increasingly want to come down
yeah.
to. You know, we want to say, look, here are what we think really are the six fundamental modules or intelligences
yeah.
that you have to deal with. And then here are three or four electives.
You know, it's interesting. I think all three of us share this marvelous double impulse. On the one hand, to go much, much, much more complex. And on the other hand, to simplify.
Exactly.
I would argue both of us have this impulse. So,
people, I think that's
for
right.
example, ask me, you know, what's Esalen about? I say, all right, do you want the two word, the six word, the one sentence, the paragraph,
exactly.
or the essay? And you've got to almost learn like that. And this is what you're doing here. You got the six word thing. You got the
exactly.
two sentence one.
You got the six volume one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the 30 volume.
Yeah.
Go read Wilbur if you can ever catch up with him. None of us can read as fast as you write, but.
Well, George, anyway. This would also, you know, we've talked about this in terms of modularizing ITP. And let me just give you one quick example of what I see happening, let's say, 5 years from now, even on, like, online. It could happen sooner, and we're already doing it to some degree, and I'm sure many of your ITP groups are doing it in their own way. But you can, for example, I can see a computer setup where somebody would come in and they would answer 30 questions, which would be a kind of assessment tool. And just for the heck of it, we can use spiral dynamics without getting too wedded to it. Because people come in at orange or green or yellow, they have very different types of value structures that they're going to be comfortable with. And you have to kind of talk a different language to those three groups because they really don't get along very well. But so somebody would come in and determine what value structure they're comfortable working within because they're going to get more motivation if you can talk in a language that they can hear. And then you say, how many hours a week can you devote to this? You know, and some people only have 1 hour a week. Some people have 1 hour a day. Some people have 2 hours a day. So once you get a kind of a sense of the level of work that they can do, then you would say, what goals do you want out of this? What are your, you know, how old are you, et cetera. And they can sort of self-design. They can pick from among these modules, and we'll say, here are the three or four we think are absolutely crucial. These are core. You can't not do these. You have to do these. But then here are two or three others that you can choose, and then here are some other electives. And then within those modules, like in the physical module, you can have different acceptable diets. One could be low fat, one could be low carbohydrate. As long as you stick to them, they both have been shown to work. You have, weightlifting and so on. And then in the meditation module, you can have Father Thomas Keating contemplative prayer. You can have Zen. You can have TM, whatever. You can have a choice among those. You would have an intersubjective module. You might have a psychodynamic, et cetera. And I think we're going to get to a point where we can really help mix and match for people based on assessment tools and their personality and their inclinations, their own present general wave of development, and sort of help construct ITP modules, practices for them that are really tailored to their needs and their capacities in any moment. And I can just see those kinds of things really, really getting out and having a wonderful impact. You know, George, you're so good at writing these things. I mean, this is also something I would love to see at some point, you know, really continue to evolve communicating this type of ITP practice.
Yeah,
George?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I'm just thinking, you go right along with the regular practice, and then you have these modules.
Yeah.
And people are doing that, but sometimes not wisely.
You know, the idea developed here out of our community ITP, you know, of having different groups that broke out, our pods.
Right.
And some of them, you know, have worked out well, and others not so well and haven't lasted, but it's in this direction, in a way.
Right. Uh-huh. This is the conversation I want to have is, you know, what right now, based on what we know, and most of what we know in pragmatic terms,
yeah.
it's been y'all have learned from the exploratory groups that you've done.
Yeah.
So what have we learned in terms of what the really essential core
it's
modules in core practices
and
are?
And it's one of the fundamental questions.
And what you think those are
yeah.
and how those are working out. And also, George, we're going to come back and continue to visit, you know, the role of kata, how effective. Let's say that we take kata as a gold standard. Here's another research question. In any of the modules, in this case kata might be in the subtle energy exercise module, as you move away from whatever the gold standard is in that module, how less effective does it become?
How does this relate? For me, more and more, it's becoming evident in this whole encounter now, again, with Aurobindo's record of yoga has reaffirmed this, that we need certain anchoring realizations. In other words, to
yeah. Yeah.
attend to them in our lives.
Yeah.
And it seems to me have to be, let's call it a spiritual element, transpersonal element,
yep.
whatever you,
yep.
however you want to characterize
yep.
it. And then there has to be a gross physical anchoring sense of practice in which a real commitment to health and fitness
yeah.
that can be attended to every single day.
Yep.
Some of these anchoring realizations which give us the satisfaction of progress
yep.
because to watch them, to experience them as they open and develop are so empowering, not only for what they give us immediately, but for the general empowerment that we're getting somewhere.
Right.
But then what I also take from Aurobindo is the fact that along with these anchoring realizations, you can have a constant improvisation that makes it enormous fun
yeah.
and makes
yeah.
it alive. And you see, so it's a combination of short-term and long-term practice.
Well, you could have a pod that would keep a record of the experiments.
Right.
In addition to the basic intentionality of the affirmation.
Right.
Yeah, Dick Baker has a nice thing, distinction of the three types of Buddhist vows. There's life vows. Those are the vows you take for life.
Yeah.
And then you have your medium-term vows in which, let's say, I'm going to work on this dimension of my being.
Right.
And then there are the daily vows.
Right.
And I find this very much in Aurobindo, that he would go on these marvelous experiments, some of which would just last for a few days. And in a way, he was somewhat like Ramakrishna. It's interesting, these two Bengali religious geniuses.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Ramakrishna, you know, in 64 tantric disciplines, none of them took more than 3 days.
Yeah.
And but then when he got to the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, he just sat down and stayed there 6 months
yeah.
in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So in other words, he too had this highly creative, highly adventurous sadhana, as did Aurobindo.
Yeah.
And one of the things that creeps into the transformative practice, I see it everywhere, is this American Puritan heritage where too much emphasis on straight line reliability and being a real good boy or
yeah.
a good girl.
Yep.
And what you get the domestication of Buddhist or shamanic or Sufi practice. It gets all scrubbed up and cleaned up. You know, Americans are famous for their cleanliness. And, you know, it's all scrubbed and cleaned, and pretty soon it becomes subtly more and more boring. And, you know...
Don't want to be boring.
But this happens. And it's in the American spirit to be clean, punctual, and eventually we bore ourselves silly with our practice. I mean... And reading this record of yoga, there was anything, you know, Aurobindo, it turns out, Ken, smoked these cheroots. You know, these are like a halfway between a cigar and a cigarette.
Yeah.
And so one of the disciples there said, oh, you have to stop this. You know, I can imagine what it sounded like. You must stop it at once. It is, you know, you're coughing and all of this. And Aurobindo says, if I have to give up smoking because I'm too weak, I'm unworthy of this yoga. And then Mahatma Gandhi's son came to him and said, oh, I see, Aurobindo, you're still attached to smoking. And Aurobindo replied to him, oh, Gandhi, I see you're still attached to not smoking. But finally, when the mother finally said, you got to stop because all the disciples think now they have to smoke, suddenly it dawned on him, and he took it out of his mouth, and he handed it to her, lit, and said, this is the last one ever. It's yours. So he quit just in an instant. But isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But it's, this biography is full of this stuff. It turns out that until he went into his full retirement, when he would meet with the disciples at night, here he was with these realizations pouring through him, and they would pass a bottle of wine around.
Yeah, yeah.
That just boggled my mind. I mean... You know, it would have been wonderful to see Aurobindo with the inflection that occurred after a glass of wine.
Oh, my God.
I just have loved to see, this. You know, Padre Pio, an ecstatic stigmatic, had 2 glasses of wine for lunch, a big beer after he had taken about 1,000 confessions at 5 o'clock, and then 2 more glasses of wine at dinner. But he was a good, healthy, robust, Italian, ecstatic stigmatic. You see what I'm getting at here?
Oh, I have no trouble with that.
Yeah, but you know, you go to certain centers, my God, you can't deviate 1 foot from this or from that, or you're, anyway.
Well, we have to have a joie de vie module.
Yeah, let's make all the modules that
way. Want to be, yeah. That, forget.
The whole thing that way.
What works well for me, Mike, in terms of explanatory power, we call this, there are two concepts that have been useful that I think have come out of the research in particular. Well, actually dozens, but I find two get more mileage in helping people understand what's going on.
One we call
levels and lines, and one we call states and stages. And levels and lines means what it sounds like. There are at least a dozen developmental lines, cognitive development, moral development, interpersonal development, spiritual development, however you want to conceive them. And research is very clear. There are multiple intelligences. Those are developmental lines. You can be highly developed in one line, like cognitive, and low developed in another, like moral. So you can be at different levels in different lines. And that's very important because a lot of people get confused. They say, well, but this person is so highly developed in meditation. How can they be so psychosexually screwed up? Or how can they be such an interpersonal dolt? Or this person has no emotional intelligence whatsoever. They've been meditating for 20 years.
Well, you know, this is the move I made in Future the Body to look for universally shared attributes inherited from the animal kingdom and came up with 12 there.
Which I think are developmental lines. I do.
Yes.
I think those
they are because each... Well, that was the whole...
That's the whole point, exactly.
That's the central thesis of the book. And then how do you, say, develop your perceptual abilities? And, of course, then that fragments out. Say, within the field of perception of the external world, there are many, many kinds of perception. Certainly you can take the five senses or the seven senses or whatever, however you want to do that. Mm-hmm. And by God, you find there are people who have done it. Let's take taste. There are wine tasters who can make more than 10,000 discriminations. There are the olfactory. I mean, there are perfume testers now they claim can make 30,000.
And that does not mean they're going to have excellence in another line. Those are separate intelligences. That's the joke.
Where we get hung up with stages, that's why I loved it when you introduced waves. In other words, we don't want to get too fixed, do we, and see that the shadings are so exceedingly fine that, you know, it would be hard to say when one ends and the next begins. What it's better to see it is, I think, is a spectrum of ever-increasing peace, serenity, and depth of the silence.
However we conceive the waves of consciousness, the point is that if development occurs or if evolution occurs, then it's moving in some direction.
Right. Well, that's the point of it.
And so there's a scale, a spectrum, and they can be colors of a rainbow, like a rainbow, but let's just number them and say that there are seven waves, and you can arbitrarily do it. You can say there are 10 or 20 or 50,
right,
as long as you know what you're doing. But what we find is that these different developmental lines flow through those waves. So whatever the expanding scale that you use for evolution is, in a sense, irrelevant. Whatever that scale is, we find that these different modules move through it.
Well, it's it.
That's levels and lines.
Yeah, well, an analogy, I mean, a map with your latitude and longitude.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's very useful. As long as we realize that the map is not the territory, it's back to Korsybsky 1A here. See, I appreciate that very much in your formulation, how it developed out into the lines and...
waves.
Yeah.
To indicate looseness of it. But the wave part, the levels part, means whatever you mean by evolution, that's level. Because evolution has a directionality, and therefore there's a gradient. It doesn't really matter what you mean, but that gradient, what's so interesting, is that that gradient is the slope that these developmental lines run down.
And you have these religious geniuses who were, you know, physically totally undeveloped, and often were socially reactionary.
Exactly, and that's levels and lines, and people know that that's happening. They know that Bill Clinton is good in some stuff, and he's a nightmare in other stuff. And they know that some Zen masters are really good in some stuff, and they're a nightmare in others. And levels and lines, they get it immediately, they agree, and that's fine. And the other is states and stages, and that also gives us a lot of importance because there are people that really don't trust a developmental scheme or a transformative practice because they say, what do you mean years? I go out and I'm one with nature and I take ayahuasca and I have the state experience. You guys are just a bunch of fascist dickheads. And they just want to get into states. Now, we're not denying that states can occur. You can have gross, subtle, or causal states of consciousness at any stage you're at. They can be very, very profound. You can have nature mysticism, deity mysticism, formless mysticism, experiences, because people wake, dream, and sleep. Even infants wake, dream, and sleep, and those are gross, subtle, and causal states that they have access to. but you tend to interpret it according to whatever mental apparatus you have present. So your developmental stage colors the interpretation of these states. So that allows people to say, that makes sense to me, because I can see now that I can be whatever stage I'm at, and I can have these state experiences, but if I want to grow and make it permanent, then I have to go through some sort of development and permanent unfolding, some sort of evolution to a point where I can hold this permanently in my awareness. And that requires development and some sort of stage unfolding or evolutionary unfolding. And that makes sense to them. Right. So I just wanted to sort of finish that gestalt on those two, because I think both of those concepts really help people orient towards an ITP, because they deal with issues they intuitively know are there, and if we don't address them, they have trouble with what we're doing. Does that make sense?
Yes, and you know, the next great enterprise is to somehow create or help create a society which allows or makes possible or even encourages this kind of thinking, encourages this kind of evolution of stages.
Right, right. Thank you, brother. And Mike, that makes sense to you in a general sense, yeah?
Oh, absolutely.
You are listening to www.integralnaked.org.